How are you guys doing today? Great. Good. I like that reception. My name's Carter, if we haven't met, and I'm one of the pastors here. Thankful you're with us today. Anybody else excited about Kids Week? Anybody getting hype after that video? Yeah, that's what I thought. It's awesome. Yeah. Man, I want to reiterate for you that Kids Week is one of the most important things that we do, because if we don't reach the next generation, then we're not fulfilling the Great Commission. And so what we want to do is raise up leaders who go out, they follow Jesus, and they lead the culture. That's what we want to do in our student ministry and in our kids ministry. And so if you've never served at Kids Week before, we moved it into the evenings so that you can participate more readily and it was more accessible. I hope that you'll sign up for it if you never have. It's one of the best things that you'll do all year, just to get to see some of those kids, just like what you saw in the video. It's very fun. And so a lot of them can articulate the gospel in a very specific way. You might learn some things yourself if you're around the kids, you know? So I want to encourage you guys to sign up to serve for that. And, of course, invite your friends with kids to participate. It's going to be a great, great summertime thing that we do. So, hey, you can go ahead and turn to Proverbs chapter 3 today as we continue in our teaching series. That's where we'll be. At least that's where we'll start. We're going to jump around a good bit to a lot of different Proverbs. It's going to be very helpful for us today. We're going to get a lot of wisdom, but we'll start in Proverbs chapter 3. And so far in the series, we've talked about parenting as training with intentionality, and we've talked about the unique role that dads play in setting the direction of a family, specifically for their children. Last week, we talked about discipline, and if you're still here, thank you for coming back, okay, after that one. We talked about why it matters and how to discipline in a wise and healthy way. But this week, we're talking about something that's a little harder to see in our lives, but just as powerful. We're talking about what kids learn from watching our lives, specifically in our finances, and how we manage our finances, because kids see everything. They see it all. Let me say something that might sound a little intense to you, but I think it's very true. If I looked at your bank statement, if I looked at that, I could tell what you really believe is important in life. I mean, that's just the reality of it. Where we spend our money is what we value. I could tell you what you believe, not what you say you believe, but what you actually believe, because your finances always reveal what you love the most. And that's true not just for parents, of course, but for any one of us. If you are a parent, your kids are going to see it in your life. If you're not a parent, make no mistake, the people around you, your friends, your coworkers, your family members, younger people that look up to you, they'll see it too. Don't fool yourself. People know what you're all about by what you spend and how you manage your money. They just do. And this taps into the idea that the Christian life should be very intriguing for people in the world. Not because we're trying to earn people's approval, but because people can see what we really value. And if we want them to value Jesus the way that we do, and we want them to value God and having a relationship with our good Father, then we're going to show that in the way that we live, especially with our money. Is that what your life is showing that you value? That's what we're going to wrestle with today as we get into this, because for both parents, I mean, for people in particular, but parents specifically, this is our main point. Your kids will value what you value. They'll see everything in your life, and they will value what you value. They're learning from what you prioritize. What do you prioritize? One of the clearest places that will show up is in how you handle your money. What does Jesus say in the Sermon on the Mount about it? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also, right? That's the whole deal. But that doesn't just mean your money follows your heart. See, I always get this backwards, right? Because it's always confusing. It doesn't just mean that your money follows your heart. It means that your heart follows your money. That's how he phrases it, right? I mean, your money follows your heart. What you love, you give your money to. But he's saying it's the other way around. When you give your money to something, your heart's going to naturally go after that thing. There's something about the heart that it follows where you put your money. So what you do with your money is literally shaping what you love, which means your bank statement is shaping your heart more than you might think. And as a parent, it's shaping your kids' hearts too, because they see what you're doing and what you prioritize and what you value. If you want them to value God and his mission above all else, man, your finances need to show that you value him above all else. And that's what the Bible is going to push us to today. It's not going to be an easy sermon, but there's a lot of Proverbs about it. So we're going to start in Proverbs chapter 3. I want to read a few verses here that we skipped over last week just for the sake of time. We're going to go back to them. I'm going to start with verses 1 and 2, and then I'm going to skip to verse 9. This is what it says in Proverbs 3. Here we go. My child, never forget the things that I've taught you. Store my commands in your heart. Remember, we talked about it. It's a heart issue, not just a behavior issue. And if you do this, you will live many years and your life will be satisfying. Then, skip to verse 9, honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part of everything you produce. Then he will fill your barns with grain and your vats will overflow with good wine. Now remember from last week, this is a father speaking to his son. So this is already parental advice. And he's not just giving him information here. He's shaping his heart. It's a heart issue, not a behavior issue. He's saying, here's how you should live in a way that's actually worth living. And you got to shape your heart, man. Tune your heart into this. The heart is where it begins, but it does show up in how you live. And so let me give you some examples of that. Verse 9, with your wealth and finances, is where he gives a particular example. He says, honor the Lord with your wealth. Now, honor here means to treat something as weighty. It's valuable in your life. The word in Hebrew is literally weight. So it's heavy in your life. It's the idea of glory. It's what gets glory and honor. So he says, honor God. Make him the most weighty, valuable thing that you have in your life. Treat him as the most valuable thing. But then he says what that should look like. He says, give the best part of what you produce. So in the Hebrew, that's literally the word first fruits. That means give the first and the best of what God has given you back to God. That's how you honor him with your wealth. Here's the principle for us. What you put first reveals what you value most. That's the big idea here in the proverb. What you put first reveals what you value most. Now, your kids are watching that. There's a slide for that, by the way. There he is. He's awake. Okay. Got it. Your kids are watching that. They're watching that. They see what you give the most weight to in your life. What is the most weighty thing? What do you give the most glory and honor to? What gets first priority is what we're really talking about here. Your first dollars or your first decisions or your first attention. Think about your phone screen time report. Uh-oh. Okay, I'm not trying to make a statement about how much time you spend on your phone, though it's probably too much. We all know that. But if you go look at the report, what does it tell you? It tells you how much time you spent on each of your apps. So you know how much time you spent on what app, and you can see where your attention was the most, right? Okay, well, that's what it's like for your kids in your life. They look at your life, and they can see what you value the most by how you spend your money and how you manage your finances. They can see it all. What do you spend your money on first? Maybe not what you spend it on the most, but what do you spend it on first? What takes priority for you? Because it'll impact what they put first and therefore what they value most. Every one of us would probably say that God is important to us if we follow Jesus in this room. Of course we would. But Proverbs is asking the deeper question, though, is he first? God demands your priority. You can't just be a casual Christian where you go in and say, oh yeah, I believe in God, and give him a tip of the hat, put a little bit of money in the bucket and say, I'm good. He demands all of it. That's the kind of God that we serve. He's not just telling you to give his money, your money to him because he wants your money. He doesn't need your money. He wants all of you. He wants your heart. Now, all this is doing is an act of worship to say, I am going to give you my whole life, and I'm going to start with my first fruits so that you see that I'm serious about it. Is he first? He's specifically asking, is God first based on how you manage your money? Is he first? But remember, what you do with your money doesn't just reveal what you value. It also directs it. That's the whole Jesus thing from the Sermon on the Mount. So what Proverbs also does here is teach us how to spend our money wisely, so that when we spend our money and we direct our money and it comes in and goes back out, we're able to honor God through that because we know that our heart will follow where our money goes. See, so we have wisdom. The Bible tells us what it looks like to be wise, to make intentional choices with our money. So Proverbs talks a lot about money. It mentions generosity, money, wealth at least 100 times through the Proverbs. You just go through and take the Proverbs challenge and read it all in 1 month because there's 31 chapters. You just pick a month with 31 days in it, you know, and you read a chapter a day from Proverbs, you're going to come across money at least 100 times, if not more. There's a lot of times that it mentions it because our heart is wrapped up in our wealth in some way. And since we know wisdom is a heart issue, not just a behavior issue, he's trying to get us to see something here. How you handle your money reveals what you value. So let's nail down on this. Proverbs gives us a very simple pattern for being wise with our finances. It's very simple. Not easy, right? Very simple concepts. I'm not going to tell you anything you haven't heard before. The problem is it's not very easy to do. says to earn, spend, save, and give. These are the four principles we're going to look at here. Proverbs 14:23 says, work brings profit, but mere talk leads to poverty. Now, the wisdom here is that we have to earn diligently. We need to learn to earn diligently. When you work, you have what you need. And when you don't work, you won't. You're like, of course, right? Well, yeah. I mean, that's the idea. Proverbs 6 says that an ant is a good example for us. If we look at the ant's diligence and how it works, and we follow their example, then we'll do well and we'll be wise. And Proverbs is saying it's wise to work. You cannot be passive. You cannot be lazy. And this is not a, oh, God will provide for me so I don't have to do anything kind of mentality. This is very much, no, faithful, steady effort over time is very wise and good. Even something as small as an ant becomes an example for us in this, because wisdom is not flashy or prideful. Wisdom is very humble and consistent and diligent. And it does the next right thing, as we've talked about before. So your work does matter. And working well is a very wise thing to do, and it's good to earn diligently. But then second, Proverbs 21 verse 20 says this, the wise have wealth and luxury, but fools spend whatever they get. So the second principle here is that we need to spend carefully. Yeah. In other words, wisdom exercises self-restraint. The fool consumes everything he has. The wise person exercises self-control in the spending more than anything. They're not spending more than they need to spend. And then when they do that, when they spend carefully, they'll have more than they need. I know we live in a credit card world, right, where we're seeing numbers on a screen instead of dollars in our hand now. And maybe it's easier to overspend without thinking about it because you don't have to. It's just there. It's all digital, right? But given that, we need to be careful. That's the warning. Because spending more money doesn't equal a better life. As a matter of fact, more money doesn't solve our problems. It usually multiplies our problems. More money, more problems. Proverbs 15 points this out. It says, better to have little with the fear of the Lord than to have a great treasure and inner turmoil. A bowl of vegetables with someone you love is better than steak with someone you hate. Okay, he's not saying it's better to be a meat eater than it is to be a vegetarian, although maybe we should draw that conclusion from this. I'm not sure. If you're vegetarian, no offense. I'm so sorry for you. I'm sorry for you. But what he's saying here is that, man, it would be better to be poor and to have a loving family and loving relationships than to be very wealthy and have everything that you could ever want materially, but to have people who hate you in your household. Wouldn't that be sad? It's better to have less with love than to have more with tension and conflict. It's better to eat salad and have a family who loves you than to have steak every night, but to have a family who doesn't want anything to do with you. And you know, some of you guys might be picking up more shifts at work to make more money, but you're killing your relationships at home. Now, I know that that's the case for some of us. We want the success. We want more money. I get that. But listen, you can upgrade your lifestyle and downgrade your relationships at the very same time. Especially with your kids, because man, they'll see it. We have to learn to spend our money carefully. But then Proverbs 13:11 says, wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. Now, the wisdom here is that we need to save intentionally. Saving's a good thing. Proverbs 21:5 says, the plans of the diligent lead to profit. You got to plan things out. We need to learn that wisdom doesn't just think about the moment for today. It plans for tomorrow as well. It's patient. It's very intentional in it. Doesn't chase the get-rich-quick schemes. You know, it builds slowly over time. Some translations here will even say that wealth gained through fraud will dwindle. So some translations will equate quick money with immoral money. That's very interesting. It's saying that not only moral, but wise money is gathering intentionally over time, little by little. So saving is not unspiritual at all. Planning for the future isn't a lack of faith. It's a part of stewardship. I mean, it shouldn't be fear-driven. You know, you shouldn't be hoarding things because you're afraid, because you can save money and still not have peace if you're trusting in your money for your security. But when you do it the right way, with the right intention, man, it's very wise. You should save money. So we should earn diligently, spend carefully, save intentionally, and then finally, Proverbs 11:24 says, give freely and become more wealthy. Be stingy and lose everything. The generous will prosper. Those who refresh others will themselves be refreshed. So fourth, we should give generously. That's the principle of wisdom. And remember, Proverbs 3:9, we just read it a minute ago. Honor the Lord with your wealth, and he'll fill your barn and let your vats of wine overflow. Who doesn't want their vats of wine overflowing, right? Proverbs brings us back to this idea that giving God your first and your best, which means living open-handedly with the material wealth that he's given you, leads to a rich and full life. When you give, somehow you will gain not just more money, but more joy and freedom and a fuller life. That's what Proverbs 11, I think, is getting at when it says you'll be refreshed. Qualitatively, it's better to give than to receive. Yeah, it's money going out of your pocket, but it's going to do something inside of you. It's going to change how you look at life. It's going to change your worship with God. But saying that does confront something in us, I'm sure, right? You can do all four of these things. It's a behavior thing. You can do the behaviors without having the heart. You can earn diligently and spend carefully and save intentionally and give generously, even give generously, but you could still be a fool. Might not be wise. Why? Well, because wisdom isn't about what you do. It's more fundamentally about what you value. That's what he's trying to get at here. It's a heart issue. I've been trying to shape the heart. So wisdom isn't just about what you do. It's more foundationally about what you value. We can earn diligently, not because we value faithfulness, but because we value success. So now our work isn't about God, it's about proving ourselves in the eyes of others or ourselves. Or we can spend carefully, not because we value wisdom, but because we value control or pleasure. So now every dollar is about either protecting ourselves or pleasing ourselves. Or we can save intentionally, not because we value wisdom, but because we value security. So our peace rises and falls with our account balance. We save money because we believe money will save us. Or we may even give generously, not because we value God or his mission or other people, but because we value what generosity can give us. It can give us a tax break. You know, we'll get more money for giving more money. Or it can give us a sense of feeling that good, like we've done something. And it'll help give us a superior attitude. You know, or feelings that we've actually accomplished something in the world and the approval of others and all that kind of stuff. It's not about God at all or the good of others. It's about our good. So you can do all these things and still have a heart that's completely off base, because what matters most is what we value. And if we're honest about it, most of us just don't value God. We don't value God. We don't prioritize God the most, especially with our money. Shows up there. We manage our money for ourselves, or we don't manage our money at all. And we're not good stewards of anything that we've been given. Here's the problem that we all face as a result. The problem is we trust money to do what only God can do. That's the problem. We look to money for security or peace or identity or control. And it can give us measures of those things, of course. We can have joy and peace for a little while. You know, we can have control for a little bit. But it's never enough. It never stops. Proverbs 27:20 says, "Just as death and destruction are never satisfied, so human desire is never satisfied." We can never get enough money to actually accomplish what we're hoping it will do for us. And to think otherwise, Proverbs is saying, is foolish. Your desires will never be satisfied. I've seen those reels going around where the guy is dressed in a suit and he looks real wealthy. He's standing in front of his mansion and the Bugatti next to him, you know, and he looks like he's got it all together. And he's like, "Hey, you know, people will tell you that you can't buy happiness, but they've just been spending their money on all the wrong things," right? You know, we look at that and we're like, I mean, it's kind of funny. It's kind of sad because he really believes that's true. And I think a piece of us always believes it's true too, don't we? Like, well, maybe he's right. I'd like to be the exception to the rule. Can I just have a little bit more so that I can try it out and see? I'll just see, you know? The problem is it's absurdly not true. And we all know it deep down. That's the thing. What Proverbs is showing us is that at a heart level, we're afraid then we're never going to have enough. And we don't trust God. And we're afraid that he's never going to give us enough. And we don't trust that he wants what's good for us. And we don't trust that what he has given us will satisfy our needs. We're afraid he won't provide for us and that he won't give us what we want and that we won't have enough. So we consume. And that's really, I mean, Proverbs seems to give us two different ways that we can manage our money. It gives us two different ways that we can think about life in general, foolish and wisdom, or what, you know, lady fool and lady wise, right? Personification. Well, it does that with money. We can live as a consumer, or we can live as a steward. That's what it's telling us here. It's our choice. The consumer is always thinking, I need more to be secure. I need more to be happy. I just need a little bit more and then I'll be okay. If I just get to the next level in my career where I can make a little bit more money, if I just have a little bit nicer house now, if I just have a little bit bigger car, that's what a consumer thinks. So on the one hand, you keep a tight grip on everything because you're afraid to lose it. Or on the other hand, you spend it wildly because you are hoping it'll make you happy. And either way, it leads to a scarcity mindset. Because whether you're a saver or a spender, you never have enough. You've always got to save more or spend more in order to be okay. Every single time. And you never have enough. It's a scarcity mindset. But Proverbs 11:28 says, those who trust in their riches will fall. The consumer mindset will lead to your ruin. And the steward is always thinking, man, this is God's anyway. And so he's going to provide. How can I use what he's given me to honor him the most and to help serve people in the world? The steward is very open-handed, and it leads to an abundance mindset. Do you know why? Because God's not limited. He has all the resources in the world. We all love to quote Psalm 50, right? Where he's the owner of a cattle on 1,000 hills. That is the God that we serve. There is no limit to his resources. Consumers ask, what can I get? But stewards ask, what can I give? Which defines you? If you're being really honest, have you been living a consumer lifestyle? Or have you been living a steward lifestyle? Because I know if I'm honest, I tend to have a consumer mindset. I know I do. You know? Not because I don't know what's wise, but because I don't trust God in those moments to be enough for me. I don't trust that he does want what's good for me. I don't trust that he's always in control and for my good. I think I have to be in control. I just don't trust God. And I have a feeling you might be the same way. You don't fix a trust problem, though, by trying harder. It's not like we have to take the wisdom now, and now we've got to do X, Y, and Z to be better. Although I'm going to give you some steps and some principles you can take. But trying harder is not the answer. You fix a trust problem by finding the thing that is more trustworthy. You got to trust something greater. That's why the gospel is such good news. Because when you repent and turn from your greedy ways, because that's really what it is, right? It's really a greedy heart. A greedy heart says, I need more so that I can be okay. That's what greed is in the Bible. And if you'll repent of that greedy heart and say, I don't think that's right. I think I can trust God. And when you go to him, he will free you up to be a steward, not a consumer. Because that's what Jesus has done for you. See, generosity is at the very heart of the gospel itself. 2 Corinthians 8:9 says this, you know the generous grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. Though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that by his poverty he could make you rich. The point here is that Jesus valued us so much that he gave up the riches of heaven to give them to us. That means because of all the ways that we've held back from God, all the ways that we've trusted money to save us more than him, all the ways that we've valued anything and everything else but God, Jesus gave himself in our place. Because he knew we would do that. He knew we would be consumers and not stewards. And so he came and gave himself as the greatest perfect steward in our place and exchanged our spiritual poverty for his spiritual wealth. Now, the riches of heaven don't include material wealth here, do they? Rather, it's a life of meaning and purpose. You get the fullness of life. You're refreshed. You get the richness that comes with knowing God and being known by him. And some of you guys don't understand that. You've never experienced that before. You're like, that does not sound like a good exchange. Man, I'll take the mansion and the Bugatti, you know? But I promise you, you were made for more than that. You were made for that relationship with God and you don't even know it. What would it take to get you to that place where you're like, man, I think I could see if God is enough? It may be nothing, I don't know. But for you, you have to ask yourself the question, is this life really satisfying? Am I really happy, or am I kind of an angry person all the time? Am I really happy, or am I always anxious and worried that I don't have enough? Am I really happy and have lived a full life? Or is there something missing that I just can't put my finger on? I think if you are honest, and you look deep down, and you do some reflection, you'll find that there's some riches that you're missing out on that you were made for. And Jesus will give us that if we put our trust in him. Jesus didn't just give some of what he had for us. He gave his whole life on the cross for us. He died the death that we deserve for rejecting God and valuing anything else but God. We'll put our value in riches, money, wealth, everything else. And Jesus died for that. But then he rose from the dead to prove his power over death and the eternal value of what he's offering us. And now one day when he returns, we're going to get to inherit the eternal riches with him if we'll put our faith in him now, in what he's done. And man, when that really begins to sink in, it'll change your life. When you realize that Jesus has given up everything for you, you will want to give everything back to him, your whole life, not just your money. Your money's just a drop in the bucket. He wants it all. He wants your whole life. Your life has to be a sacrifice for him, a living sacrifice to God, because he was a dead sacrifice for you who came back to life. And now he wants to give you the life that he has with the Father. And you can do that today if you believe in him. Yeah, that's the gospel that we believe as Christians. That's what we believe for 2,000 years. And when that begins to sink in, you realize that it'll change everything that you value. And when what you value changes, how you manage your money will start to change too. It will. So there will be some steps that you can see, wise steps that you begin to take. So let's make this very practical, and this will be quick. If Jesus is becoming more valuable to you, what does this look like? Let me give you three really simple guardrails that Proverbs gives us to direct us in the right way. The first is to be intentional with your finances. Some of you guys don't even know what your finances are. You just kind of spend and you don't think about it. Maybe you don't have to. You need to think about your finances. Proverbs 27:23 says, "Know well the condition of your flocks." Okay, well, if you know back in the day when you had flocks, that was kind of like a symbol of your wealth. However many animals you had is how much wealth you had. All right, think Jacob in the Old Testament, you know, with Laban and all that kind of stuff. So for us, he's saying we need to take stock. What's the condition of our finances? Because for us, it's our bank account and our budget and our spending. And wisdom says, don't ignore that. Pay attention. Now, you don't have to worry over it now because you know God's your provider, but be intentional about it. Most people don't plan to be unwise with their money. They just slowly default to foolishness over time, right? So you got to be intentional. Maybe it's because it's overwhelming to you to think about that you're not. Or maybe you have something else overwhelming you in your life and you never get to it because you're already overwhelmed. I'm just going to tell you, you need to sit down and think about your finances. Think about how you steward what God has given you. I want to encourage you, ask yourself this week, where does my money actually go? Maybe just writing it down is very helpful. Use a spreadsheet. There's tons of apps out there that'll help you with this. Man, in a world of AI, okay? In a world of AI, ChatGPT will help you, all right? It's not the Holy Spirit, but it's kind of, okay, well, anyway, you know, I mean, we have no excuse, in other words. Make a plan, like, look at it. Be intentional, because that's the second thing. You can't change what you won't face, so you got to face it, but the second thing is make a financial plan. And remember, Proverbs 21, it said the plans of the diligent lead to profit. You got to plan. Wisdom decides ahead of time what you're going to do. Remember, wisdom is knowing what to do and doing it, right? And so you're making plans to do what you know is wise. This is how I'm going to use what God has given me. This is how I'm going to spend on this. This is how I'm going to spend on that. This is where I'm going to live. This is the kind of car I'm going to buy. This is what I'm going to do for a job. This is what I'm going to go at. College student, this is what I'm going to pursue, right? So that I can make money over time, all of that. It's good to have a financial plan. So it includes how you earn money, how you spend it, how you save it, and how you give it. Those are the four things we talked about earlier, right? It's not complicated, but it's not easy sometimes either. Because you got to take a hard look at what you really value the most. You're already doing these things. You're spending. Maybe you're not saving or giving, but you're certainly spending, aren't you? So you need to think about it. If you need help, man, there's tons of resources online, but I just want to offer our elders to you. I mean, that's what we're here for, your community group leaders. Look at somebody in this church that you can tell manages their money well, because remember, guys, you can always tell, okay? Look at somebody and go, I want to be like that. Let me ask them what they do. Have you ever thought about that? And you're like, well, I don't want to talk about money with people. Well, okay then, brother or sister, you got an idol problem, right? You're like, well, I'll talk about anything but my money. People shouldn't know how much I make. People shouldn't know what's in my bank account. Well, I'm not saying just share it willy-nilly with anybody, but if you can't share it with some trusted people who you know are for your good and want you to be more Christ-like, there's a problem. You need to be able to share what you make and what you spend with people. You need to let somebody look in. That's accountability. And if you're not willing to have accountability in somewhere, then that means God's putting a finger on that and going, there's a heart issue. You value something else. You value something else. So make a plan. Now, lastly, prioritize generosity. And I just want to say this one as a matter of fact. This is what Proverbs puts the most weight on. Remember what Proverbs 11:24 says, give freely and become more wealthy. I don't think it means that figuratively. I think it means it literally. Now, that's not a prosperity gospel type of message. That's not what I'm saying. It's not like you give 100 to God and he's going to give you 1,000. That's not what I mean. But I'll tell you, you ask any person in here who has been tithing for a long time or giving to God for a long time, and they'll tell you that every time that they give to God, he always gives to them what they need and more. Always. Because it's an act of worship. That's what the Bible is saying your giving is. You're giving your first and your best, and it's an act of worship to God. And when you worship God and you're obedient to him, not just with your finances, but with your sexual integrity, with your mind and your thoughts, with how you do your job with integrity, when you honor God in obedience in your life, he honors you. There's something about it that when you give, you gain. Now, that's how God works. So you got to prioritize generosity if you want to grow in your financial stability. Remember Proverbs 3:9 again, honor the Lord with your wealth, with your first fruits. It's your first and your best, because what you put first reveals what you value most. So let me ask you plainly, do you have a plan to give back to God? Or do you just kind of do it willy-nilly without thought, or do you do it at all? Are you giving anything to God's mission? Because if God is first, he will show up first in your giving. He just will. And I'll tell you, some of you might have some stagnation in your discipleship and your growth with Jesus because you're not willing to do this very thing. You're not growing because you're not giving at all. Giving isn't a tip toward God, remember? It's not just a little thing that you do so that you'll appease him. That's not it. If it's an act of worship, then it's part of your growth in discipleship. That's why it's one of the five things that we say you need to practice here if you're going to grow in your faith. Gospel gather, group, give, and go. All of those things are important for you to grow in your faith and maturity with God. Maybe some of you guys aren't growing because you're just never willing to give. You just can't. You've been holding on. It's been holding you back. I'm telling you, if you want to grow and you want to grow closer to God, you got to start giving your first and your best to him, because this is an act of worship. You're not worshiping him well. Biblical generosity flows in two directions, toward God and his mission, and then toward the needs of others that you see around you in your life. It's the greatest commandment played out. Love God and love others. That's what your money is meant to do. It's a tool that God uses for his glory and honor, to worship him, but then also to serve others in the world who are in need. So, man, give to his mission first, and then make margin in your finances for the needs that you see around you. You can't solve every problem, and you're not going to be able to help every need, but have you made margin in your finances to try to help people who are in need? You got to do both of those things. And I hope that does mean that when you give to God's mission, you're giving here. We believe that in the Bible that it tells us that we ought to give to the local church primarily when you give to God's mission, because you want to give to what's effectively bringing people into God's mission. But on saying that, I know there's a lot of baggage with it. And maybe you've been in church and you've had pastors do that and ask wrongly. If you think that my heart is in the wrong place and telling you, yeah, give here to God's mission, then give somewhere else. And I mean it from the bottom of my heart, guys. I want y'all to grow, because I think once you get to a place of maturity, you'll realize we don't want your money here in that way. We want to be effective in the mission. We want to see more people saved here. Now, if you want to give to that, that's great. But if you don't give at all, you don't have a problem with me. You have a problem with God. I'm telling you, give somewhere else. Go Blue Ridge Women's Center. Yeah, the least of these ministry. Straight Street, down the street. All of these invest in God's mission to share the gospel with people and bring them into God's family. Give to God's mission. That's what you need to be doing. You need to give to God's mission so that it is an act of worship. And it means deciding ahead of time what you're going to do with your paycheck. And you give on a weekly or a biweekly or a monthly basis so that you're giving your first and your best. That's what my wife and I do. We draft right out of our bank account. As soon as we get paid, the very first thing that comes out is our tithe. We want to give our first and our best. We don't even want to have, there's no question what we're going to do with that first 10%. It's going to go to God's mission. That's what we do. And if you're not sure how much to start with, let me just give you the recommendation. Start with 10%. It's typically called a tithe in the Bible. The Bible, that seems to be the starting point for your giving, not the ceiling, you know? If you're making $30,000 a year, let me put it to you, you're giving $3,000 away. If you're making $100,000 a year, you're giving $10,000 away to God's mission. You're like, man, that seems a lot. I think that that's the pattern that the Bible gives us for a reason, because we trust God and we want to honor Him with our wealth. So I hope eventually as you mature in your faith, you'll build trust and community here. You'll give through the local church here, because I'll tell you what, we've seen 9 people get baptized this year, right? Those 9 people, they have stories of life change where they were living a certain way and they came to faith because one of you shared the gospel with them, or they came here on a Sunday and they heard the gospel and they've been changed from the inside out. Let me tell you, that's no small thing. That's a miracle that God has done that. And some of you guys are sitting in here today that that's happened to. How did that happen? Well, in part, it was through your generosity and our generosity together, because y'all know this building costs money for us to sit here. Y'all know our staff costs money. Y'all know that the ministry and the mission costs money. And yet God's the one who provides all the resources. We have everything that we need. God will give us what we need. We wholeheartedly believe that. But do you want to invest in that with us? Because I'll tell you, I don't think there's any more effective place for God's mission than in a local church that's really going after God's mission. Now, maybe you've been in a local church where that wasn't true, and I understand. But here, we want to see people come to know Jesus. That's what we're all about. We want to be a part of the mission. We have a vision over the next 5 years to see 500 people get saved in this valley because our church exists here. And then we want to be able to send 50 of them out so they can go share the gospel somewhere else and see true multiplication happen. That's no small thing, and that's going to take a lot of money over time. Do you want to give to that mission here? I hope you do. If you don't, give somewhere else. But you got to give something, because what you give shows what you value. So, as I begin to close, for those of you who aren't parents in here, maybe even if you are, maybe you're realizing something about your own story. You're like, where did kids show up in this? They'll see it, man. I'm telling you. But so will other people. And so maybe can you, when you reflect on your family of origin, you go, maybe this is why I struggle with money the way that I do. It's because it's what you were shown. It's because of how you lived growing up. Let me tell you, Jesus can undo that in you if you will lay that down before Him and repent of that greed and turn to Him. He can. He can change you. You valued other things, but now you value Jesus more. He can undo that in you. You may need to spend time praying today, responding in that way, asking God to give you a grateful heart and replace the greed with gratefulness. But for those of you who are parents, I do want to say your kids are watching. They're learning what matters from you. What's worth chasing after in life? They're seeing it. They're learning what they really value from what you really value. So what are you showing them? Are you showing them that money is your security, or that God is? Are you showing them that you have to be anxious about where your money comes from? Are you showing them that you can trust God to provide? Are you showing them what life is all about is getting more money? Are you showing them that life is all about following God and living on mission for Him? Your money will show them that. And I'll tell you what, we need to be better financial stewards of what God's given us if we want to raise kids who go after Jesus and not after the American dream. They go after God's dream. Let's be the kind of people who don't just say Jesus is valuable, but then don't live that way. Let's be the kind of people to back it up. Let's put our money where our mouth is, literally. Because your kids will value what you value. So let's make sure that they see that Jesus is worth everything in your life. Let me pray. God, we desperately need you on topics like this, because it's not a fun topic and it's kind of hard sometimes to lock in and really want to let you work in our heart. But Father, I just pray that today all over the place, people will let you come in and change and rearrange how they view what they value. God, I pray that we'll value you above all things. We'll value your mission in the world above all things. God, help us to love others, to love God and to love others, and that would be the trajectory of our lives, so that as we raise children in this world, in this individualistic culture that is very materialistic and all about what we can look like and what we can buy and how we can live, God, I pray against that, and I pray that our church wouldn't be that way, that we would be a generous church. Because I know, God, in your mission, for us to make an impact in this city, we're going to have to be generous more than anything else. God, I pray that we would become a generous church like you want us to be. Help us, Father, to live for you with everything in our lives, but specifically our money. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks so much for listening with us today. We hope that it was an encouragement to you. But you know, we don't see this as a replacement for gathering with other believers in a local church context. So if you don't have a local church, we would encourage you to plug in with one wherever you are. And if you're in Roanoke, Virginia, we'd love to invite you to plug in with us here at Redemption Church. And you're welcome anytime to gather with us. But you can check us out online at our website, redemptionroanoke.com. You can look for other content or resources there. But thanks again for listening.